Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back hour three, about 10 minutes into the third hour on this Monday, going back out to California. John White joining us, Santa Anita. And as Johnny alluded, Santa Anita providing, and Golden Gate providing a very welcome distraction. And hopefully it continues. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Well, it came right down to the last minute on Friday that we even knew Santa Anita and Golden Gate would be racing. Santa Anita in contact with the governor's office, and it was up in the air right until about 45 minutes before the first race on Friday, to where they got the official green light to go ahead, and they made a pretty compelling case. One of the key elements, I think, the fact that Santa Anita saying they were going to donate all of their profits during this period of crisis to the coronavirus cause here locally. And whatever the governor's office deems, that money needs to go. So that was good. And, of course, the strict protocols that are in place at these California tracks also, I think, went a long way. Also, these horses need to be cared for. I mean, you know, one thing that was smart was that Santa Anita and the thoroughbred owners of California, you know, said that these horses, they can't just stand in these stalls and not do anything. And so they've got to go out in the mornings, they've got to exercise and so forth. And they were saying that it actually takes less manpower and of an effort, actually, to a large extent, to conduct the racing than it does for training in the morning. And, you know, they've been allowed to have the training. So if you're going to have the training, let's have the racing. And especially as Johnny D was saying, and a lot of people have been saying, you know, it doesn't hurt for us to have something to at least try to take our mind off of this to some extent. I mean, I have to say, when I'm sitting there making the morning lines for the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday cards, and you're just going through your normal kind of routine, it's very surreal because I'm doing my work as usual, but A, I don't even know if these races are going to be run, so I feel like maybe I'm, you know, you don't want to cut corners, but I mean, it's kind of hard to sit there and just go with the same thoughts that you normally do because you're distracted yourself. I mean, you know, you're just totally distracted. But by the same token, I put my head down and did that, and to the best I could. And you just didn't, like I say, know whether these races were... I mean, I'll be honest, if I was making a morning line on whether Santa Anita was going to race Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I would have made not racing the favorite. When you, particularly in light of the governor's stay-at-home order, once that was issued on Thursday, I thought, well, there's just about no way that they're going to be able to have racing. And I'm really glad that they did because, as I say, it did give us something to kind of take our minds off things. And certainly I enjoyed watching the racing from Fairgrounds and the Louisiana Derby and the Fairgrounds Oaks and these races like that. And I actually had a pretty good weekend of handicapping, and which you feel like, well, that does it really matter all that much? Or, but, you know, at least, like I say, I feel like I'm going doing as good a job as I possibly can, which is what I always do no matter whatever I'm doing. So these are just very trying times. And Nate Newby, who is the Senior Vice President, General Manager of Santa Anita, was on Mike Willman's show yesterday morning, and he said it best when he said, because he was asked, well, what about the upcoming week? And he said, look, we're planning to run Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And he said, but we have to take this day by day. And I was saying to people that this is a day-by-day situation. Last week, I've gone to it's like about a minute-by-minute deal, because it seems like you can only go a few minutes and suddenly you find out this has happened or this is canceled or that, you know, it's like I sit down yesterday morning and find out that the Dubai World Cup card's been canceled. So, I mean, just every time you turn around, you're finding out something is the latest casualty for this this terrible virus.
Well, and when it came to the racing, John, let's start with Santa Anita. And you did have a couple of the graded stakes. Haven't addressed those yet. Kind of have been focused on fairgrounds, and it's kind of easy to cover off the last three stakes of the weekend at of the season at fairgrounds with Brad Cox earlier. And we're probably at this point tomorrow, we'll try to get Steve Margolis. I've been wanting Margolis all winter. He's had a great winter. We'll talk about She's on the Warpath, who won that Benson. But let's touch on the wins on Saturday in the San Simeon. Here was Sistron, and that was such a weird scenario. I talked about it with you the other day, where six of the seven were making seasonal debuts off layoffs. It was something I don't recall seeing in a graded stake like that. And Sadler, Espinoza, Aronis.
Yeah, with Sistron, what a training job by John Sadler. Sistron had not competed since the Grade 1 Bing Crosby at Del Mar last July, a race that he won with Victor Espinoza aboard. And despite the long layoff, he got the job done. Now, one thing that you mentioned, I think that helped Sistron, that he was in the same situation with so many others in this race. So the fact that he wasn't one or two or three in the race coming off a layoff, but he was one of just about everybody in the race coming off layoff, that actually kind of helped him, I think. But had he got a beautiful trip, I mean, he sat just right off that pace, and heading into the far turn, I thought, boy, if Sistron fires, I mean, he was just absolutely in the perfect position to pounce. But that said, I am really surprised Bound for Nowhere didn't win. I made him a 6-5 favorite. He went off at 1-2. And, you know, with his credentials coming into this race, I really thought he would be ultra tough to beat. I will say this is an exacta for the sire, the factor, who Frank Miramonte, the track announcer at Santa Anita, has pointed out to me what a tremendous turf sire the factor is. And he's a war front, so this isn't coming out of left field.
No.
But, boy, the factor is really someone that you better pay a lot of attention to. You can get some really good payoffs with these factors. You know, at the fairgrounds, we have a factor.
Well, factor this.
Yeah, I mean, who has absolutely turned into a monster, and he was, I can't fathom how he paid what he paid off his last race. I mean, I know why he wouldn't go favored, but boy, I was stunned at the price he was. And but this Sistron is really a consistent runner. He fires. He's blossomed. You know, he's much better now than he was earlier in his career, and he was decent early in his career, but he's just really blossomed. And, you know, now he's a graded stakes winner, a grade one winner on the dirt, and a graded stakes winner on the turf. And, boy, that was a heck of a way for him to kick off his campaign. One thing I will say that was in the back of my mind on Bound for Nowhere, while I thought on paper he really was a standout in the race, and certainly with the majority of bettors, he was a standout in the race because he was hammered to 1-2. Wesley Ward in the last couple of years or so has not had, and this is not, I haven't looked this up, you know, like Brad Free is so good at this with Formulator and so forth. So this is just off the top of my head, but I have such respect for Wesley Ward as a trainer. I mean, look, the guy sends horses over to England and Royal Ascot and does extremely well. But in the last year or two or maybe three even, when he has sent horses out here to Southern California, there's been a lot of them that get bet and don't get the job done. So that was kind of in the back of my mind, and I thought, well, this will probably be the exception to that rule if it is a rule. And no, it wasn't. It was a case where Bound for Nowhere is a heavy favorite. Now, it's not like Bound for Nowhere didn't run well. He ran very well. He got beat in a photo. But you just, on paper, thought, wow, the class and the buyer figures that Bound for Nowhere has run. I mean, even on TV, they showed the race at Belmont where he stumbled at the start, going 7 furlongs on the turf, and despite stumbling at the start, he wins by over 4 lengths. It gets a 106 buyer. I mean, when you see a performance like that off, you know, stumbling and a layoff and so forth, and get a buyer like that, you just think, how in the world is he ever going to lose this race? Well, he did lose the race, so... But that was a good race. You know, that's one thing about what happened at Santa Anita Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We had a lot of good racing, and not only that, but fortunately we came through it, you know, without any incidents too, which is something I mentioned to you last week, that I was so glad that Santa Anita was able to go through their racing and not have any incidents. You know, this is particularly mindful for many of us here at Santa Anita, considering the dire situation we were in with Santa Anita a year ago. So, the racing at Santa Anita, and we've all of a sudden got a spate of wet weather. It was pouring here just a few minutes ago. And we're all of a sudden, after a very dry January and a very dry February, which is complete opposite to last year, we've had a very wet March. And so we're in a cycle here weather-wise of where we're getting the rain. But this is a case where Santa Anita was lucky this week because the rain, really for the most part, they got just a little sprinkle. But the rain stayed away for the racing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then it poured this morning. So thank goodness this wasn't a day earlier that it was pouring yesterday, because I'm really uneasy to see what's going to happen if we get a real severe rainstorm. I wouldn't even rule out the possibility that Santa Anita would decide not to hold the races, because that's sort of at the start of this meet, that was the thinking, that if they get a real bad rainstorm, you know, not just kind of a mild one, but a real bad one, that they could maybe even cancel racing. So I'm really thankful that the rain came today and not yesterday.
John, the other great at stake on Saturday, Mike Pipey and the Williams Cowbred. How about the lucky pulpit, Warden Jerry, the 7-year-old?
Well, and this is, you know, Lucky Pulpit, of course, most famous as the sire of California Chrome, the California-bred superstar, a 2-time Horse of the Year. But Lucky Pulpit's been a very solid sire. But this dam, Tamarack Bay, who is a daughter of De Hare, and, you know, De Hare really sired a tremendous broodmare here in this Tamarack Bay. She spitted out these stakes winners, including Tamarando, a grade one winner, but multiple stakes winners. She's really been one of the best broodmares I've seen really in the last 25 years. And now she's got this grade three stakes winner. And this is a pretty neat story because this is a 7-year-old gelding. So at the age of 7, he's able to get his first graded stakes victory. And this was a very good ride by Flavian Pratt, who had Warden Jerry just lurking close to the pace early, going a mile and a half. And when it came crunch time, Warden Jerry had the needed response to get the job done here. And I will tell you that Mr. and Mrs. Larry Williams have been such supporters of California racing as breeders and owners. And they've got a ranch up in Idaho, and their stable manager, ranch manager, is Dan Kaiser. And I will tell you a brief story about Dan Kaiser from when I was a steward at Lavoie Park in the 1990s. Dan Kaiser, one day, as a trainer, lodged a claim of foul. And I was working with John Ward and Bill Stallings in the steward stand. And there was no question about it. It was a very frivolous. And even back then, we had gotten away from fining people too much on the frivolous claims of foul, but it was still being done more then than it even is today. And John Ward was really upset that this trainer, because obviously Dan Kaiser tried to talk his rider into claiming foul, and the rider wouldn't do it, and so Dan did it himself. And as I say, there was absolutely nothing there in any way, shape, or form. So we had Dan Kaiser come into the steward's office the next morning for this that we considered as a board of stewards a frivolous claim of foul. And John Ward said, why did you claim foul? And my feeling was that this was good on Dan Kaiser's part. Instead of saying, well, you missed it. You still don't see it. He was very contrite. He came in. He said, right off the bat, I've been around this game a long time. This is maybe the most embarrassing thing I've ever done. I promise you I won't do it again, and so forth. So I was pretty satisfied with that right off the bat. So we sent him out of the room to decide whether we were going to fine him or not. And the first thing John Ward said was, you know, this was so frivolous, we really need to fine this guy. And I said, well, first of all, not only was he very contrite in here, but I said, did you happen to look at his shoes? And John said, no, I didn't see his shoes. What about his shoes? And I said, well, when he comes back in here, take a look at his shoes. These shoes were just in horrible shape. I mean, they were had all kinds of holes, and I felt very bad for the guy. And the racing conducted by these trainers and owners at Lebois Park in the 1890s, I made the statement one time to my fellow stewards, and it became kind of a catchphrase. I said that, you know, a lot of the people putting on the show here in Boise are just one step ahead of vagrancy. So, you know, you've got to keep that in mind when we're going to be issuing these fines. So I voted for no fine. Bill Stallings voted for no fine, and John Ward voted for, I think it was like a $200 fine. So Dan Kaiser skated away from getting a fine. He comes back in, and we said, you know, please don't do this again, but in this case, you know, you're not going to get fined. So the next morning, I'm in the stable area kitchen to get a cup of coffee, and there's Dan Kaiser, and he's got a beautiful pair of Reeboks on. And I said, good morning, Dan. He says, good morning. And I said, where'd you get those shoes? And he says, well, they're my regular shoes. I said, so that was no accident that you had those horrible-looking, holy shoes on when you came to see us in the steward's office yesterday morning. He said, no. I figured I'd take my best shot and, you know, wear a horrible pair of shoes in there. And I said, yeah, I pointed that out kind of on your behalf when we were trying to decide whether to fine you or not. I said, look, it worked, but be careful. I said, please don't do, you know, that again in terms of lodging a frivolous claim of foul. He says, Judge, I won't. Don't worry. Well, fast forward like 15, 20 years later, when I'm working at the Panic on television at Santa Anita, and it was a Cal Cup day, and so Mr. and Mrs. Larry Williams were represented very strongly on the card, and Dan Kaiser was there because he's their stable manager, farm manager, and he came by the stand, and he goes, hey, John, he says, do you remember me? And I said, yeah, I certainly do, Dan. I said, how you doing? I said, I haven't seen you in a long time. And he says, do you remember that time that I walked into the steward's office with the shoes that were all bad and everything? I said, I said, Dan, that's one of my favorite steward stories, I got to tell you. So we had a very good laugh about that.
Pretty cute. Well, in addition to Warden Jerry's performance, the Calbred, how about yesterday? Let's also slip in the Balthus. Was it Balthus yesterday? No, where'd it go? Miotti yesterday with in the Sensational Star. Lieutenant Dan for Nick Alexander, can't say no. And another, yet another nice Nick Alexander homebred.
Well, right off the bat, this is another very good California sire grazing. And I can remember sitting, you know, at the walking room there at Santa Anita one time chatting with Mike Mitchell between races, and we would talk about various things, and Mike had trained Grayson, who's showed a lot of talent on the track, but had his career cut short by an injury. And I remember Mike telling me, he says, John, this Grayson, believe me, I'll be shocked if he's not a very, very good sire. So I marked that in the back of my mind. And one thing that I felt a little maybe contrary to that, but when Grayson was just starting his stud career, is he's by Benchmark. And Benchmark was a very good sire, but Not really a strong sire line, really. And, you don't really see the Storm Cat or what you kind of want to see in a sire line. So for me, the jury was out. Well, as often the case in these things, Mike Mitchell was totally right. And this Grayson has been a very successful sire for quite some time. And Lieutenant Dan out of an Indian Charlie mare. And, it's getting harder and harder these days not to see a Bob Baffert influence in these pedigrees, because so many of the Bob Baffert horses that he trains are so accomplished on the track and then go to stud and become successful. Look at Wells Bayou. He's a son of Looking at Lucky. And, of course, Bob Baffert trained Looking at Lucky. And here's a case where this horse, Lieutenant Dan, is out of an Indian Charlie mare. And, of course, Bob trained Indian Charlie, and Indian Charlie was the favorite in that Kentucky Derby in 1998, but had to settle for third. And Baffert won the race anyway with his other horse, Real Quiet, who would go on to almost win the Triple Crown. So this is a horse, Lieutenant Dan, who has become extremely consistent. I mean, he's only been worse third one time in his entire career, and I just have such a soft spot in my heart for horses like that. That he doesn't win them all. He's won five times now, but when he doesn't win, it's he's not running a clunker. He goes out, he runs a very honest race every single time. He was coming off a good effort on the dirt in the California Cup Sprint against the Wind Machine, Fashionably Fast. And that was a heck of an effort by Lieutenant Dan that day, and it kind of exemplified what I feel about Lieutenant Dan, in that he isn't going to win every race, but he's going to give you an honest try. And he did that day against a razor-sharp runner that is on quite a winning streak. And Lieutenant Dan made Fashionably Fast work very hard for that victory, and the time was very good, 109 and change that day. And this was another case where Drayden Van Dyke gave Lieutenant Dan just a beautiful ride, as Lieutenant Dan was just, you couldn't have drawn up on the board any better to where you would want him early and heading into the far turn. And Lieutenant Dan gets the job done here. Steal the Diamonds, I thought, had a decent chance to maybe try to steal the race. Last time out, she had led all the way in the Sunshine Millions Filly and Mare Turf Sprint, which is a mouthful to say, takes about as long to say the name of that race as the length of that race. And she's in excellent form, and I thought she would probably pop out to the early lead, and with Delgadillo aboard, could be maybe tough to catch. I really thought that you had to have a lot of respect in the race for Just Grazed Me. Originally, when I was first making the line for the race, was thinking about making her the favorite, and then I kind of shied away because she was a mare running against the boys, Steal the Diamonds, a filly running against the boys. So I thought, maybe that'll cause their prices to be just a little bit bigger than maybe otherwise, the fact that they're straying into these ranks to run against males. And so I made Lieutenant Dan the morning line favorite. He did not go favorite, and he went off at, a pretty juicy 3-1, quite honestly, considering his consistency and he coming off such a good effort in his previous race when he got a 90 buyer. And Lieutenant Dan did get the job done there at that 3-1. So a very nice win there. And Stephen Miotti, a guy that, when he was just starting off his training career, which goes so far back, that was back before in the early 80s when I was a columnist and reporter for the Racing Forum, and he was really pestering me to try to write about him in my daily column that appeared on the back page on most racing forums. Sometimes they'd get an ad and your column would go inside the forum, but whenever people pestered me like that, my answer to them would be, look, I'll be happy to write about you, but I'm not going to just write about you. You need to do something to give me something to write about. So I said that, the first time you do something of note, I'll be happy to write about you. And so he continued to pester me. And then finally one day, like, he won two races on a card, or he did something that at least, to me justified writing about him, and I did. And but that goes back. I think he might have been the one person, the one trainer that of all the years I covered racing and talked with trainers, he might have been the one that pestered me the most to try to get some publicity. And I actually give him credit for that because, you know, that's kind of smart. You know, that was the early 80s was kind of a turning point in our game, and that was when Dwayne Lucas burst upon the scene, and Lucas was very good with the press and so forth. And the horsemen like the Charlie Whittinghams and the Willard Proctors and guys like that, they really didn't care that much whether they got press or not. And, you know, they were able to succeed anyway. But, you know, you think about today with social media and everything. I mean, it's so important for a trainer when you're competing for clients to get your name out there and, you know, get word of mouth. And so, you know, I'll give Stephen Biondi credit that he was actually, you know, kind of ahead of the curve, really, in terms of wanting to get some publicity on the back page of that racing form. And ultimately he did, and he's had a really long, successful career.
Well, no doubt. Nick Alexander certainly just on a steady basis, a real stalwart of the Calbred program. And I always get a kick out of Nick. You know, he's got the baseball player names, and you know, he's always got you know, something clever when it comes to, you know, naming his horses. And here's Lieutenant Dan. John, let me wrap up before we go, and look forward to, you know, keeping the hopefully the train on the track. Some thoughts about the Louisiana Derby outcome.
Well, I thought Wells Bayou was going to be tough going into the race because I really thought he ran a terrific race in the Southwest when he got beat by Silver Prospector. And I was a little nervous about him maybe at the mile 3/16 because that was a new wrinkle to the Louisiana Derby this year. But I've become such a fan of Giroux that I thought was a big plus. And, you know, look, Giroux has been winning a lot of these races in that part of the country by riding aggressively, you know.
Yep.
Every time he wins one of these races with a ride like he came up with in the Louisiana Derby, I can't help but think of Andy Serling and how he's often spitting nails in those races on the East Coast when these riders are all sitting there taking hold. And, you know, I appreciate it when a jockey will use a horse's, when speed is a horse's weapon and the jockey will utilize that weapon. And I saw two of the best we've ever had in this game do this on a regular basis for year after year after year in Southern California. Gary Stevens was one and Pat Valenzuela was another. And these were jockeys that, you know, they could rate a horse. I'm not saying that Gary Stevens couldn't come from way behind or if the situation called for it, you know, he would rate a horse. But Pat Valenzuela and Gary Stevens won a flock of races, and they won a lot of races on the far turn with their aggressive, or out of the gate, actually, in a lot of cases, where they would just gun out of there and take the race to the people, to the competition. They were very adept at that. Now, not every jockey can do that, or else every jockey would try to do that, because a lot of jockeys will do that, and then they've got no gas in the tank for the last part of the race. So that's kind of the tricky part, is that you've got to be able to do that in the right situation, in the right kind of race, with the right kind of horse. But, boy, I've been impressed so much of how Giroux's been able to do that lately. And this Wells Bayou is a very, very nice horse. And, of course, Brad Cox, this guy has just risen through these ranks and become such a top trainer in this country now. And he's another guy that I enjoy listening to you when he comes on your show. I like his candor. You know, he's pretty candid in terms, and that's like Mark Cassie's, another trainer that I feel is very candid when he talks to you. Bob Baffert's very candid when he talks to you. I like these trainers that I feel like are being very forthright when they're talking about their horses. And I put Brad Cox into that category. So this Wells Bayou, I mean, to me, he didn't look like a loser at any step of that race. And I certainly like the way he came home. And he's a serious three-year-old. Now, Did he get a big buyer in the race? No, 91. Did he have it his own way? Yes. Were there any of the Bob Baffert monsters in there, like a charlatan or a Nadal or those type, or an authentic that he had to deal with? No. But this is an improving colt who I think has a very bright future here, no matter how it turns out. He's proven he can win on a wet track. He's proven he can win on a fast track. He's proven that he can win at Oaklawn. He can win in New Orleans. He can win at Keeneland. So there's a lot to like there. And I also like the fact that, you know, this wasn't like a 6-7 horse field. I mean, even though he's the one that went to the front, led all the way. But still, when you win in a 14-horse field, no matter how you win the race, the fact you defeated that many opponents is always something that resonates with me. I think it's an important aspect to a race, the size of the field. When you see these horses come here to Southern California or New York or Florida or what have you that have been running in South America or Europe and they're coming out of 20 or 23, 24-horse fields, that's where a fourth-place finish or a fifth-place finish actually can be a very good race. But we're so accustomed here in the United States to looking at a horse who finishes fourth or fifth, and it's not that big of a field that we feel like, well, that wasn't much of a race. And I mean, in the vast majority of cases, it isn't. But so that size of the field is an aspect when for horse players, I think, to always pay attention to.
John, I appreciate it, and we hope we'll be talking about Florida Derby results and Santa Anita Derby on the horizon. Keep things going. You and Tracy, stay safe, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Take care. And by the way, it's just so great having your show. It gives kind of a sense of normalcy to be able to get up early in the morning and put you on and listen to your guests. And again, your coverage during this crisis, is you're doing us all a big favor out here in listener land. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's my obligation. John White, everybody. Post Time John on Twitter. And, of course, Santa Anita, the Morning Line Odds Maker, and the program analysis. Let's step away. Last break of the morning. Cricket Goodall from the Maryland Breeders is going to join us and talk about Bob Manfuso, who the industry lost over the weekend. And, of course, the Manfuso family, I mean, Bob's father, one of the absolute foundation of modern Maryland breeding, the whole family. It's a tough one. Cricket Goodall joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on? University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Races a little less than 15 minutes to noon on this Monday, and the passing over the weekend of Bob Manfuso, I was instantly saddened. And one of the interviews I've had on the show in recent years, getting Bob Manfuso on when Catherine Sophia was tearing it up. And just one of the countless horses that Manfuso and Katie Voss bred, and whether it was commercial or horses that they campaigned. And Manfuso's presence and involvement in Maryland racing, second generation, his father, one of the most important stalwarts in Maryland breeding. And there's really no area of racing in Maryland that Bob Manfuso wasn't involved in, including tenure as a partner in the Maryland Jockey Club. Cricket Goodall is going to join us. And, of course, Cricket is synonymous with Maryland Million and the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. And I hate Cricket that this has to be our first visit together, because it's a pleasure under normal circumstances to welcome you. Just so saddened by Bob's passing.
Yes, we all were. What a shock. Bob was feisty till the end. So the last time I saw him, he was actually at our Renaissance Awards dinner, our Champions dinner in February. And, of course, he was accepting awards graciously for his homebreds. But, he was great. And he was bigger than life, as always. I've worked for Bob and Katie a long time at the Horse Breeders Association and Maryland Million, and they were, the racetrack was really Bob's love. It really was his passion. I mean, he loved, the commercial market and breeding horses, but he really loved the racetrack, and he did. He with Frank DeFrancis back in the heyday, believe it or not, that was Maryland Million was in its infancy, and Bob was probably the biggest proponent for having the first Maryland Million run in 1986 at Laurel Park. At that point, the tracks were owned by two different parties, and so we were sort of bargaining, or the Maryland Million group was bargaining a little bit, and Bob was instrumental, and that first year was a make-it-or-break-it year for Maryland Million. Is this event going to go? Is it going to be a success? And Bob just really believed in it. So I've been thankful to him for all those years.
You mentioned that he had kind of a bigger than life presence, and he had a deep kind of booming voice and a real real presence. And like so many individuals, Cricket, that we've talked to in the 15 years we've done the show, between Dr. Bowman and Alan Foreman and Bob Manfuso and George Ann Hale, I think about all the people that worked just tirelessly when it looked like Maryland racing was in real peril. And to have him pass while literally within hours of what transpired in Annapolis, knowing that Laurel and Pimlico are going to have this glorious future.
He was dedicated. I mean, he was. It was his passion, and he loved, growing it and watching it grow and investing in it. He brought a lot of new people in through partnerships, both from the breeding standpoint and the racing standpoint. And, yeah, he could be gruff. I mean, lately for the past few years, the people who saw him in Saratoga, he proudly wore his big bad Bob cap because he loved that persona, to be big bad Bob. But behind that, if you got past the sort of gruffness sometimes, he was all in and really loved what he did and loved the people involved. It was his whole life. And yes, you're right, to have him go at a time when, after the world comes back to normal, hopefully, to have the future so bright in Maryland for the racing and breeding industry is just it's good. I'm glad he got to watch that happen.
Well, and I know from Alan Foreman, Bob was on a conference call literally hours before he passed.
Apparently, that's what I heard. Yeah, no, it was a complete shock. I mean, he's on boards, he's on meetings, he was involved to obviously till the very end on decisions in racing and what we're facing, with all this coronavirus stuff. I'm sure that's what he was worrying about at that point. So and what a way to go. I mean, really, if you got to go dine with your boots on or getting off your conference call, and I a lot of us would wish at that age when we've lived a full life to have that be the way we go.
Cricket, from your dealings with Bob and Katie Voss, what did they enjoy, and what did Bob enjoy more? Breeding a horse like Catherine Sophia and sending her out into the commercial market, or campaigning one of his own, something maybe that didn't sell, and I remember he had Court Folly was a nice 3-year old. There's plenty of runners we could trot out, but
right,
what did he enjoy
right.
the most?
I think he enjoyed the camaraderie of the racetrack and getting friends, going with friends and getting friends involved. Wayne Harrison, who his partner on Lacetus,
right.
is a longtime partner of his. And, of course, Jeff Hughley, one of the original partners of Forbros, was very involved. And I think he loved all that. But then as he got more involved in the commercial market, he was very dedicated to that. You'd see him at the sales, and he was very serious about it and approached it in a business-like way, and of course really had a lot of success with homebreds and going out through the commercial market and or keeping them and racing them. And what could make somebody more proud than that, when you know that the family of horses goes back generations and you continue to breed good horses who sell well if that's your choice. And I think he really liked the commercial market too. I mean, he enjoyed the sort of auction mystique or whatever you want to call it. He spent summers in Saratoga, or at least the month of August, I think, and enjoyed that whole part of it too. So I think it was, the whole picture, the whole package. And running the racetracks at the time that he did that was very a good learning curve, good lesson, good. He approached that like a business, but he also was instrumental on the backstretch and working to make sure that part of the business was good and the horsemen were happy. And it was more than just the bottom line with Bob.
He was destined. Was he always destined to be involved? I mean, with his father's, with the base that his father, the foundation that he laid?
I think so. I mean, I only knew Bob from the horse industry side of it. So, yes, and his father was, they had a farm, Osufnam Farm, and had been the HVBA director. And so, yes, I think Bob and Tom, to a certain extent, their passion became the thing they loved and could work at. Of course, they obviously had a company to run and people to make sure that happened with. But I think certainly the racing side or the horse industry side of it was something that I saw him at every all the time. I mean, there was just not a time that I noticed that Bob wasn't available because he was off running a business somewhere else, although I'm sure he was very involved in that as well. You know, his whole family was. So I think he was, yeah, it was really a destiny and a passion. And he was on a lot of boards and committees. He was on our board until, you know, for as many years as he could be on the board. He came to meetings and still to this, you know, till the day he couldn't anymore, was telling us, you know, what his thoughts and how to do things and what he recommended, and that was all valuable. And that's, you know, to be 82 or early 80s and still that passionate about it, you got to give him credit. It's a tough business, as we all know, and it can beat you up a little bit, but he did not let that deter him.
Well, of course, the reality of our current malaise with the pandemic is going to preclude that.
Right, right.
The proper number of people get to pay tribute, you know, when he's laid to rest. But there, I know that from the, you know, the obits, there'll be a celebration of life when the time.
Well, and there, I'm certain there'll be more acknowledgments of Bob Manfusa's contributions over the years. There will be a time that we can really honor him in the ways he deserves it, whether it's a naming an area for him or naming a race. And so all of that will come to pass. We just have to deal with this initial time where we can't gather. And you just, you know, hope that the people who are grieving the most have a good support group to be able to do that. But I think we have to look back on it and say, what a way to go. You know, you didn't suffer. You didn't linger. You were tough till the end. He, that's the way he would have wanted to be. I believe that.
Well, Cricket Goodall, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, and her role is just, for how long? I mean, you've been for as long as
30,
I can remember.
It's going on 35 years. Now and then I was there for the first one. So it's quite a long, and I, you know, so lucky for me, I've worked for so many of these people and learned so much from them, and you know, we'll miss them, but you know, time moves on, and we're looking at the next generation, and that's the good thing. That's the good thing in Maryland. We're always looking to the future, and now we have a future to look forward to. So we'll miss him, and thanks for having me on today to talk about him. I think that he's a great man, and I know that he had far-reaching communities in Kentucky and other places where he did business. So I appreciate you having me on.
Well, as I said, I only regret that this had to be the introduction. Knowing how important you've been to Maryland.
You'll get me back on maybe for Maryland Million, or we'll see what happens this fall. Who knows what'll be running when? But at some point, yeah, I'd love to come back and talk about our industry here in Maryland.
Well, everyone, thoughts with Bob Manfusa's children and extended family, and with Katie Voss. Cricket Goodall, everybody, from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association and the Maryland Million, one of the three pillars of in Maryland, with George Ann Hale and Ellen Charles. It's the women are lead the charge. And
it's the year of the woman, so yeah, thanks for that.
Not at all. Cricket.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Cricket Goodall from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association pay tribute. And, you know, I do have to get to Ian. I mentioned Port Folly. I really should have Ian. We'll have Ian Wilkes, because Voss and Manfuso had a long relationship with Carl Nasker and Wanda, and with Tracy and Ian. As well, they've been partners in horses, and so when we get Ian, we'll get him to, and of course the court folly with a famous upset in the Amsterdam that summer. Could it be court folly, as Tom Durkin famously said? I want to thank Brad Cox and Alex Waldrop, Johnny D, John White, and Cricket Goodall just now, and Casey back on the board. Fonner Park and Will Rogers Downs open up the BPs. Two nice cards. All right? Take advantage. Support them both. And we'll talk to you tomorrow at the races. Sirius XM. Thanks, everybody.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Want an online tournament that boasts no rake, skim, or takeout with a $10,000 first prize? Here it is. Play ExpressBet Live online Saturday, March 21st. ExpressBet Live is for account holders only, with no registration or other pesky fees. Simply make a live $20 wager on one horse in 10 competition races. Earn the most and collect $10,000. Plus, there's from $1,000 to $4,000 in additional prizes. The top 30 finishers automatically qualify for the $50,000 ExpressBet Showdown. Sweep the card and earn a juicy $5,000 bonus. Don't have an ExpressBet account? Visit ExpressBet.com today and qualify for a $100 bonus. Then register free for ExpressBet Live, the best tournament value going. Play live online with ExpressBet Saturday, March 21st, and it could be your day, but only if you play. Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Public Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.